Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to this special public discussion. It's wonderful to see you all here. My name is Josh Horden, and I'll be chairing the event this evening. It's a joint event between the Philosophy Society and the Christian Union. I'm a member of the Philosophy Society and of the Christian Union, so it's a great pleasure to be with you this evening. The title for this evening is The Resurrection of Jesus, Religious Invention or Historical Fact. And we're delighted to welcome our speakers, Gary Habermas and Ken Humphreys. And I'll hand over now to Georgie Gardner, who is the president of the Philosophy Society, who will be introducing Gary Habermas.
Thank you. Good evening. Professor Gary Habermas gained his PhD from Michigan State University. He's now a distinguished research professor at Liberty University and is a visiting professor at 15 different graduate schools and universities. He's published 32 books, half of which are on the resurrection. Gary Habermas. And now I'll pass you back to Josh to introduce Ken.
Kenneth Humphreys has taught both in the UK and abroad, including a senior lectureship in modern languages. Religion, and in particular the claims of Christianity, have been a real lifelong interest for Ken. He's now fully occupied as a writer, radio broadcaster, and public speaker, and campaigns energetically against the tide of resurgent superstition and unreason. I give you Kenneth Humphreys. With those introductions over, I'll now explain the format for this evening. We'll start off with two statements, one from Ken initially, and then from Gary, of 15 minutes or 18 minutes of length, around about that sort of length. And then we'll have some responses from both sides of about 5 minutes or so. And then we'll have a time of open discussion between the two speakers. After that, there'll be a time of Q&A. After that, we'll have some closing comments from the speakers, and then we'll finish. So, to begin our public discussion this evening, we have Ken Humphreys.
Good evening. I'm not a great believer in conspiracy theories, but it did seem as if today somebody on high was making life difficult because there was a four-hour delay at Gatwick Airport thanks to an unusual storm. If it was an attempt to prevent my speaking here tonight, it did at least fail. Okay, let me thank both the Christian Union and the Philosophy Society of Edinburgh University for this opportunity to speak. Let me also thank Gary Habermas for this willingness to debate on a topic that I certainly find of consuming interest. So there's some joy in that, but I should also say there's some sadness in the fact that here we are in the early years of the 21st century and yet we are discussing the reality or otherwise of the resurrection of a man from beyond the grave. It would perhaps in all places seem unfortunate here in the city of David Hume that we have to discuss this issue, because I think he himself, if we allow the possibility, would be turning in his grave that we still entertain such ideas. In view of the time span, I may have to speak fast, but we have a lot of ground to cover. The 19th century was notable for the progress of humanity in its understanding of the universe, and its successes, of course, led to the retreat of religion in many spheres, so that it was a reasonable expectation on the part of many thinkers in the early years of the 20th century that by now religion would have retreated into the shadows. And it certainly seemed that way as the hammer blows of science and rationality forced religion to retreat and it no longer, with any great commitment, maintained its old truths. Now, that prevailing optimism of a rational future without superstition prevailed through much of the 20th century, of course. And I can remember in my early childhood, the enthusiasm of projects like the putting of men on the moon, that the future seemed to be bright and the future seemed to be very rational. And what perhaps helped summarize and capture that optimism for a scientific future was a program like Star Trek, which gave us on a weekly basis a vision of what life might be like in the 23rd century. It would be a rational future where mankind would boldly go across the universe, and religion didn't figure in that really much at all. If you remember the early series of Star Trek, well, the only time religion intruded was when a primitive alien race was either deluded or some devious aliens were using technology to fool simple people. But humanity was guided by the logic of science. Now, that seemed to be sufficient for most of us back in the 60s and 70s. And it's rather surprising that now in the 21st century, some of the battles that had been fought in the 19th century need to be refought. Now, why is that? Well, I think partly the answer is the same wealth that brought us things like the Apollo mission and putting man on the moon also fed itself into colleges of biblical study throughout the USA, who had, since the famous monkey trial in Tennessee in the 1920s, been somewhat cowering in a corner, very uncertain about the future, because rationality and science threatened the very existence of organized religion. Now, they may have become a footnote in history were it not for the fact that some of the delights of technology, such as television, made it possible for religion to move to the forum of mass communication, and we had the rise of TV evangelicals who were very adept at selling Christ and very adept at raising vast amounts of money. Now, from that time in the 1970s, these institutions have developed a response to the rational revolution. They've learnt certain tricks and certain ways to gain credibility, one of which is to use some of the language of science. So they talk about data, for example, in a very scientific term. The wealth provided a number of scholarships, provided the development of a number of biblical schools, even the emergence of some strange institutions called Christian universities. Certainly strange to any rationalist, that is. Okay, they have come forward now with a number of explanations, if we put it that way, which challenge science across a broad front. We're all familiar with the notion of now called intelligent design or creation science, which is thrown down the gauntlet, of course, to evolutionary biology. We have the challenge of something called young earth geology. And of course, we have a whole body of information relating to the central beliefs of Christianity, which are no longer perceived as simply matters of faith, but we are told they are matters of fact and history. And the resurrection of Jesus is described now as one of the best attested facts in history, which to anyone of a rational disposition seems an extraordinary claim, that we might be able to maintain the resurrection of a person from death 2,000 years ago is better attested than, say, the Battle of Actium or Julius Caesar. But these claims are regularly made. Now, Let me familiarize you, those of you who have never entered the twilight zone of Christian apologetics, just how this methodology works. And I'll briefly give you an introduction that won't take more than about 3 minutes, which I think we just about have time for, but as it relates to a different resurrection, that is, of someone other than Jesus. Now, the person I'm going to take for this example is actually known to you all, and you immediately recognize the example. If we take the story of Snow White, you will know that she returned from death through the kiss of a prince. Now, many of you might think that that is a fairy story, but actually it's one of the best attested events in history. Now, how can we prove that point? Well, we have a number of first-hand witnesses to that event. For example, we have the handsome prince himself. Now, his life was changed by that event. He got married. He lived happily ever after. So we have a witness there that we can rely upon. Who else do we have? We have the wicked queen. Now, that's a particularly good witness because she gives enemy attestation of the event. She wanted Snow White dead, but no. So we have a second really good witness. We had the witness of the servant who was sent to kill Snow White. Now, he changed his mind, of course. He didn't kill Snow White in the forest, he let her live. So here we have a very good witness from a cynic. A skeptic, we could say that he changed his mind. He's a third good witness. Now, we have something which we might also describe as an embarrassing witness. For example, we had the witness of the magic mirror. The magic mirror is such an obvious silliness that the fact that it's in the story proves that it must be true. Okay, and giving some support to that idea is an early creed. That creed, as we all know, is mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of us all. Now, that shows that that story is actually more, can be traced back to prior evidence. The creed obviously preceded the story. So we have the evidence there of a creed. Who else do we have to bear out this story as history? Well, of course, we had the statements made by happy, grumpy, sleepy, sneezy, dopey, bashful, and doc. We have 7 first-hand witnesses to the resurrection. In total, then, we have 11 witnesses, first-hand statements that this is actually history. Do we believe it? Of course we don't. It's a fairy story. I'm just playing with words. And Snow White and the 7 dwarfs is a fairy story. And I'm sorry to tell some of you that Jesus Christ and the 12 disciples is a fairy story. And evidence for the resurrection is constructed in precisely the way I've outlined. Now, we might maintain, of course, it could all be true anyway, in which case it requires a miracle. Now, I'm not going to rule out a miracle a priori. After all, by its very definition, it's something so unusual, we wouldn't know it, we wouldn't have evidence for it. At least, how would we prove that it had ever occurred? Okay, so my point would be that we have no evidence for the resurrection other than that which has been carefully constructed by people so motivated to maintain the truths of a religion which had been weakened to the point of almost self-destruction by the proofs of science. But nonetheless, you know, the industry which can present this story as fact has vast strength, vast resources, transmits its message across the world, holds forums explaining how it is all true, and I have to say, it is all bogus. Thank you.